This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into 2026. If you are on the East Coast, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's Cashing Out. Happy New Year. And I appreciate you making us a part of your very first listening experience in 2026, as it's a big night here across sports. The college football playoff semifinals underway. And in case you missed it, the Miami Hurricanes in 2025 returned. They are back. 24-14 win over the Ohio State Buckeyes. They will advance to the semifinal round and take on either Georgia or Ole Miss with a chance to go to the national title. To help us make sense of what we saw earlier today, also preview what's to come tomorrow, Jonathan Von Tobel, you know, Money Moves here on the network, joins us now here on Cashing Out Progressive Guest Line. JVT, put yourself in my shoes. They're size 13s. They're E-wide. So that's like the biggest wide, biggest width you could possibly get. I've got Miami 16-1 to win the title. I've got a little bit on 70-1 that I bet late November when they may not have been in the playoff picture. And I just lost a couple hundred dollars on hedging with Ohio State today. Would you have hedged the way I did? Would you have believed that Mario Cristobal could win that game tonight?
No, I wouldn't have, because I have Miami at 16-1 to win the national championship myself. Realistically, it was too early to hedge. I know that sounds kind of crappy because you might just lose it, but then you find yourself in a situation like you were today. you got to wait until there's a few more steps, right? So yeah. Now, as they are onto the semifinals, I think now is the time to start to take a piece of stuff. If you're in my position with 16-1 that you haven't taken anything away from already. So, no, I would not have done that. But hey, I am sure you have set yourself up to still get something out of this at this point.
Yeah, no. I'm still sitting in a good spot. And, you know, I have Texas Tech 19-1, which now I probably won't hedge that one. I just wanted a ticket to be alive into the semifinals to hopefully do something with. But like, you and I have talked for a while here. I'm a Miami fan, and I like the hire of Mario Cristobal because, you know, he's a good recruiter, but I never trust him as an in-game coach. I've stolen your phrase that you've said for a long time, winning on the margins. And he's a guy who consistently loses on the margins. So as this game's playing out and they have a lead and things are going their way, I just never believed that they were going to hold on to it. That's why I started betting Ohio State. But can we take anything away from the Buckeyes losing the game the way they did, where they were clearly not the better team on the field for most of it, and assess Indiana in that light? Because Indiana, one of their big wins this year was the Big Ten title game over Ohio State. And in the Rose Bowl coming up here on Thursday, they're a touchdown favorite against Alabama. Does what you saw from Ohio State have any impact on how you view Indiana going up against the Crimson Tide?
You know, no, I don't really think so. I mean, I thought one of the things that really stuck out for a second consecutive game, you know, and it almost doesn't benefit a team like Ohio State, a young quarterback like Julian Sayin, to roll through a schedule the way that they did, because they didn't really face that much adversity. And Julian Sayin never really saw true pass rushes until the last two games of the season for him. And ultimately, yeah, they were both losses. Indiana was able to get after Ohio State. And then, of course, we saw today the Miami pass rush, which had been very good, got after him as well. So I don't know if I use this as a barometer to measure Indiana as we move forward, especially because I know that you and I have talked about this, Dustin. I know you have the general thought that it's just different with the SEC. I'm not really there with Alabama. I think that when you look at the statistics, this bears out that this is going to be the weakest rushing attack in the postseason right now versus one of the stronger rush defenses in the postseason. And I don't know if a one-dimensional Alabama offense is going to be able to get it done against Indiana. They might be able to stay inside of seven and a half. There's a couple of rogue 7.5s out there in the week leading up to today. But I don't know if I see Ohio State lose this game and then subsequently think anything less of Indiana barely getting by them in a Big Ten championship game.
Yeah. I just think everyone stinks. I mean, if I assess all these teams, it's not the days where there was like one or two just absolutely dominant programs that were a couple of tiers above everyone else. So I think that's why I took the 7 and a hook with Alabama. But I'm not against Indiana. I think Indiana is rightfully the number one team in the country and correctly favored in this game. JVT is our guest. Money Moves, him and Stormy Bonantoni, weekdays 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN. What do you make of Oregon and Texas Tech tomorrow? Because I've got that 19-1 on Texas Tech to win it all. I'm not sure I buy the path how they got here. I'm not as high on the Big 12, I think, than some other people. I think it's like the group of the power three, and then there's the group of five, and then you've got the Big 12 somewhere in between, like in between minor leagues and AAA. How do you view Oregon and Texas Tech?
So this is the game that I've changed my opinion on out of all of them. You know, for this round, I've been consistent on three of the four games for the most part. But this one, I've come around to where the market's been here on Oregon. We saw that this opened up in favor of Texas Tech at some spots. It was fleeting, but it was one and a half. Now we're in this 2.5 for Oregon. There's a couple of things that stick out to me that kind of bother me about what Texas Tech has in front of them here. First off, it's their offense. And this might be a symptom of the strength of schedule that we're talking about for them in the Big 12. But Dustin, if you really break down the minutia of what they've done offensively, this is an offense that is heavily reliant on generating explosive plays, and specifically generating those explosive plays through the air. Now, Oregon, if you look, one of the few weak points you could find in their defense, they're floating around the 25th percentile in explosive pass plays allowed. So maybe you're going to be able to generate those. But everywhere else, Oregon has been really tight. Non-explosive expected points added per play. They're near the best percentile in the country. Expected points added, overall success rate. It's a really good group. They themselves can rush the passer as well. And I know Baron Morton, Stormy, told us this yesterday, or actually it was today. You know, she got to talk with the coaches. She's on the sideline for this one. Morton's been in a walking boot outside of the games all year long. He's finally out of it. He finally feels healthy. But if he's going to endure some of this pressure while also desperately trying to generate some of these explosives that Texas Tech has relied on for a long time, then I think that's going to be a little bit of a problem for him. And to invoke Indiana one more time, I thought there's a lot of smart film analysts out there that broke down the way that Indiana matchup went with Oregon. And I think a lot of people, and I was one of them, immediately go, well, if Indiana can get six sacks against Dante Moore and the Ducks, well, couldn't Texas Tech? But a lot of people will point out to you that Indiana does a lot of great stuff in terms of disguising their pass rush, stunts, different things. You don't know where the pressure is coming from. Well, Texas Tech will just line their guys up and go after you. Is that going to work here against Oregon? I think ultimately I've just come to the point where this is where this should be. Oregon's the better team. It's just under a field goal on a neutral. I think all of that makes sense. If you tell me right now, I'm going to twist your arm and other parts of your body, you got to pick. It's going to be Oregon here against Texas Tech. This is the game that I've kind of flipped on when you've looked a little bit more at the matchup.
Yeah, I'm on Oregon money line. I also took a little bit of the under. I just think it's going to be a bit of a battle on the line of scrimmage. How about the Sugar Bowl? And that's not a reference to what Michael Irvin is doing tonight, celebrating the Miami win. Ole Miss and Georgia, dogs laying 6.5. Totals 55 and a hook. What do you make? Is Ole Miss live to do something interesting, or do you think the dogs roll?
I mean, so I got to look too, because I haven't checked for a little bit. So this is what I keep saying about this game. And I'm not like a big believer in this kind of thing. However, don't we think it's a little weird that if you lick your finger and test the wind and you just ask people, what do you think this game is going to be like? Or listen to some of the analysis. There's so many who are almost dismissing this game as Georgia's just going to move on. And yet, unlike the Alabama-Indiana line, this has not gotten to 7. This has been sitting at 6.5. In fact, some spots are sitting at 6. So despite the general thought that this is going to be an easy game for Georgia, that they're going to move on, remember here at VSiN, a majority of us picked Georgia to win the national championship more than Oregon, more than Ohio State. The Ohio State thing looked at least fruitful right now because they've been eliminated. But I am really interested, Dustin, in this team because I think Georgia has gotten better. I had them in this SEC championship game. There's been points of evidence to that case. This is also a team that has trailed in almost what is, I think it's every single one of their SEC games at one point, have had to rally in these contests, have not looked as consistent on offense, and have really just chalked it up to, let's just make this a rock fight, and then if it's tight in the fourth quarter or in the second half, we'll be able to pull away. Is that sustainable, and are we dismissing too much Ole Miss here in this spot against a Georgia team that at times, and if you look at their numbers, from an efficiency standpoint, their pass defense had struggled throughout this year. Their pass rush was non-existent. I've kind of gone a little bit more to the Ole Miss side here. If this gets to a full 7, I think the Rebels can stay inside of that number against Georgia here.
I'm 100% with you. I think Pete Golden has a chip on his shoulder, and you're going to see an inspired effort, at least for the first half. I took Ole Miss in the first half. I don't know what to make of Georgia, man. I agree with a lot of what you said, and I think Gunnar Stockton is way better than I thought he was going to be this year. Coming in, the thought was like he's a game manager because that's what we saw last year in the playoff. But now it's his offense. They've got more playmakers. But I don't know if Georgia is like the Georgia that we're normally used to seeing. So I think Ole Miss has a chance. I do think it's curious why nobody is wanting to back the Rebels. At least, hey, we saw with Miami. The money didn't come late. Maybe it comes later on Ole Miss. I want to take the conversation over to the NBA real quick because you and I were texting. I've heard you on Money Moves where you're talking about the awards market. Most improved player is a really difficult market. I feel like I've heard you and Kelly Bidlin talk about this before where it's like the guy who gets it sometimes deserved it the year before, but they wait for him to do that. Then he gets, there's a lot of weird stipulations. Who do you like in that market? I know the number is shortened, and do you still think it's worth a play on the guy you've been hyping up?
It's Keontae George for Utah, and yes, I think he should be the favorite. And don't take my word for it. Take the word of NBA media members and voters who have come out over the last few days as Keontae George has been on a torrid stretch and called him, Dustin, not one of the candidates, not the leader in the clubhouse. They have called him the outright favorite, and they have called him the most improved player in the NBA. Keontae George has been incredible. I sent you the numbers in terms of what he has improved statistically, but if you watch him, and this has been some of what these media members are espousing, he's improved in just his game in general, his handle, the ability to throw, his ability to pass, his footwork, everything. He just looks like a better player at this point right now. Yes, at 8-1, I still think if you haven't gotten on the train, now is the time to do so. This guy should be the favorite, or at the very least, the co-favorite with Denny Avdia at this point right now. He has been scoring like some of the best out there. It looks like he's going to be an all-star as well for the Utah Jazz. That is a massive improvement for Keontae George at 8-1. I'd grab it now because I think that's going to shorten here in the next couple of weeks.
He is Jonathan Von Tobel. You can catch him on Money Moves 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time with Stormy Bonantoni earlier in the day here on VSiN. My friend, Happy New Year. I appreciate you staying up, hanging out with me and doing this tonight. And enjoy the rest of your night where I think you're going to be able to do whatever you want because you got an empty house over there.
I do. Thanks, buddy. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to the crew. Don't work too late.
All right. That is JVT. When we return, we'll hit the top stories in the National Football League, including an update on that Steelers-Ravens matchup. That's coming up next on Cashing Out.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN. It's the Sports Betting Network. Welcome to 2026. Thanks for making us a part of your new year. If you're tuning in on the East Coast, West Coast, we still got a little bit to go here. But a lot going on in sports because New Year's Day is shaping up to be an awesome trio of college football playoff games that's going to have to live up to what we just saw with Miami earlier, knocking off the Ohio State Buckeyes as 7.5 to 10-point underdogs, depending on when you saw the market, as Miami advances to the national semifinals. They'll get the winner of Georgia or Ole Miss. We'll preview that game coming up a little bit later on in the program. But right now, it's time to hit the NFL because it's week 18, and there's a lot of information coming out about all these teams and these matchups, who's playing, who's not, who can we expect, and we'll talk about all that right now in the three-point stance.
The top stories in football.
We want some more! We want some more! We want some more!
Every single day.
Ice up, son! Ice up!
This is three-point stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
Let's begin Sunday Night Football. It is Wednesday, by the way, which means we have our obligatory Lamar Jackson update. Now, normally, this is the time in the week when Lamar Jackson does not practice. However, the report today was expected to practice earlier today. So with that, the Baltimore Ravens taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They remain 3.5-point favorites. Total in that game has dropped from 43 down to 40.5. I'm seeing a 41.5 out there, so shop around for the best number. But Lamar coming back, does it make as big of an impact as you would normally think? A guy who's won a couple of MVPs here, he has not looked the same. He has not looked comfortable. It's like at some point this year, something broke in Lamar. And I do believe he's dealing with some injuries, but this is the time of the year where they pay you a lot of money to work through those issues and show up, because if there's a chance to go to the postseason and Snoop Huntley is your quarterback for this game and Lamar Jackson's able to walk, well, then Lamar Jackson shouldn't be the quarterback of this team next season. I think a decision will have to be made for the Baltimore Ravens if that's how it goes down. But based on the news that he was expected to practice earlier today, I anticipate Lamar Jackson being able to go. Now, I don't know if that does anything to the number here for me. I still kind of like Pittsburgh in the points. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Don't get me wrong. I understand. You're like, hold on. DK Metcalf isn't in the lineup. How are they going to move the football? I don't care, man. It's Mike Tomlin with a chance to go to the postseason and add to his allure. With if he missed the postseason this year, would they think about letting him go, even though they've had a winning record this year? I think Mike Tomlin finds a way to have this game come down to the fourth quarter. So with that, I bet the under earlier in the week. It's dropped down here at circa to 40.5. News has come out that TJ Watt, dealing with that lung issue, was limited in practice earlier today. Maybe there's a chance he actually comes back. I didn't really anticipate that. And then maybe some help from a receiving perspective for Pittsburgh coming. Calvin Austin returned to practice. He missed last week with a hamstring issue. Not that Calvin Austin is much of a game changer, but at least it's someone who, if you can get him the ball in space, might be able to make a play or two that could help you out. What I expect to be a low scoring game here. Because no DK Metcalf is an absolute dagger. I mean, that just annihilates what Pittsburgh wants to do offensively, although it could be a big Kenny Gainwell game. Gainwell could benefit from the absence of Metcalf based on the way this Baltimore defense is approaching running backs, specifically catching the ball out of the backfield. But John Harbaugh met with the media earlier today, and this is what he had to say about Lamar's status.
I can't speak for Lamar or anybody, but he looked good, you know, and I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic, and we'll see how it plays out the rest of the week.
He's very optimistic. Do we believe him? I feel like based on track record, John Harbaugh is a guy that you can take at his word that Lamar should be able to play in this game. I do believe we're trending towards that. So we will see as more news develops. We'll update you on that. But I'm not so sure Snoop Huntley is a big downgrade from the way Lamar's been playing this year. So I still like the under as my favorite play for Sunday Night Football between the Steelers and the Ravens. Pittsburgh is 7-3 covering the number against Baltimore going back to 2021. Pittsburgh's 3-1 against spread versus Baltimore at home in that time span. And the under's 8-2 in their matchup since 2021, 4-0 when the game is in Pittsburgh during that run since 2021. All right, our second story up here in the 3-point stance, it's in New England and it's another legal issue. In case you missed it, Patriots defensive lineman Christian Barmore facing a domestic assault charge, which stems from an alleged domestic incident that occurred back in August. Mike Vrabel unfortunately had to address this a day after hearing about similar issues from wide receiver Stephon Diggs. And Mike Vrabel said this when he met with the media.
Well, I would say not disappointing at all. I think that, you know, these are allegations, like you mentioned in your question. It's things that we have to handle, and every day that there's distractions, some are smaller than others. And, you know, I'm confident that, you know, we'll focus on the Dolphins and, you know, those two individuals that you mentioned will, you know, be able to, you know, handle the ongoing legal process.
Vrabel also added that he hadn't heard of anything that would keep Diggs or Barmore from playing in week 18. And I think the legal process is probably going to end up having to play out here unless more information comes to light. So I would anticipate both those guys being around, at least for the early part of the postseason, depending when the legal process gets going here. I mean, I'm not a legal analyst. I barely understand the laws in my own home. So I don't really know what to do with that. But I do think that the NFL isn't going to try and get ahead of anything and suspend these guys based on the information that we have right now. In terms of week 18, Vrabel said the team's starters will play in the game against Miami. Patriots are still technically fighting for the one seed in the AFC. What they would need to do is they would need to beat Miami, and the Broncos would need to lose to the Chargers, who are resting Justin Herbert and a bunch of other players. New England's laying 10.5 right now. Total is 45.5. This is a tough game to call. I don't really trust the Miami defense, but I'm also not willing this late in the year to lay 10 and a hook with New England. But New England, postseason, big things on the line this year. I think they'll go for the one seed as long as they can. But at some point, you got to think about what's coming down the road because you're going to be playing a playoff game the following week. You can't really afford to lose anyone if you're Mike Vrabel and company. And then finally, our last story in the 3-point stance, the Philadelphia Inquirer's Jeff McClain reporting earlier today. Jalen Hurts, most of the starters for the Eagles are expected to rest week 18 against the Commanders. So you look at that matchup at the link. Philly is laying 3.5 now. This one opened at 12. Now it's down to 3.5, 4, 4.5, depending on where you shop. Total's been hit from 42 and a hook down to 38.5 at most places because of this news. Tanner McKee, Jahan Dotson, feel like maybe a little Will Shipley, Tank Bigsby in your life in this game against the Commanders. I still kind of like the under. If you can get a 39.5 right now, because on the other side for Washington, Dan Quinn came out, told reporters that it's doubtful that Marcus Mariota suits up for this matchup. So that means you're probably going to be looking at Josh Johnson again. How much is he moving the football, even if it's against the second and third unit for Philly? Vic Fangio is a competitive dude. I feel like he still has some pride and wants to limit what that offense will try to do on the road at the link, where for Philly, you know, Dallas Goedert didn't practice earlier today. This could be a good opportunity, especially matchup-wise, for Grant Calcaterra if he ends up on the field. Because, you know, you got a quarterback in Tanner McKee who's been a backup that a lot of people have hyped up based on his preseason experience and the way he's looked in preseason games. This is an audition for a guy like Tanner McKee. Philly would love for Tanner McKee to ball out because maybe they could trade Tanner McKee. Or dare I say, maybe they make Tanner McKee the replacement and cheaper option to Jalen Hurts and deal Jalen Hurts. That's highly unlikely, but I think McKee's going to take it seriously. He wants to show what he can do at the NFL level, even against a team like Washington that, by the way, does not have a good defense this year. Dan Quinn's 11-1 to the over as a dog of 3.5 to 9.5. Quinn is 8-4 to the over versus the NFC East. Sirianni is 17-5 against the spread as a home favorite of 7 or less. I'd also think about laying it with Philly, even if they rest the starters. I think 4 might not be enough points against a Washington defense that is banged up on every level, that's allowing teams to throw it all over them. And I expect Tanner McKee to be pretty formidable in this spot in an audition role in an NFC East matchup. Hey, right now is the best time of year for bettors, and the all-new Boomer Sportsbook is bringing you the action. Football, hockey, basketball, and more. Use the code VSiN250 when you sign up for a Boomer's mobile account, and they'll match your first deposit up to $250 in bonus bets. Plus, get -105 lines on all pro football spreads every regular season game. All you have to do is download the Sportsbook app today. Boomer Sportsbook. Learn more at betwithboomer.com. Must be 21 or older. Terms and conditions apply. Bet responsibly. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Still to come on the show, we will tackle the Sugar Bowl, Ole Miss and Georgia, where I agree with Jonathan Von Tobel, who joined us last segment. I don't think Ole Miss is getting enough respect. You got a quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss, a guy who's won a national title at the Division II level. He is used to big games. I know the stage is bigger, but he's performed with every opportunity. And I do think his mobility, his legs, that kind of raises the floor of that offense. Even when you have some questions without Lane Kiffin there, I think because Trinidad Chambliss is so mobile, he can keep Georgia on their heels and make that game very interesting early on. So we'll talk about that game a little bit later. But when we return, you know, a lot of backups are getting in, and there's some interesting matchups when it comes to a player prop perspective. We will tackle who the best matchups are when it comes to player props. The running backs, catching the ball, running the ball. Who do I think could be worth a look? We'll break it all down coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Happy New Year to those of you on the East Coast tuning in. You're in the future in 2026. I am still on the West Coast while waiting midnight here. But appreciate you making us part of your night, however you may be tuning in. In case you missed it, the University of Miami all the way back. They pick up the win in the Cotton Bowl over the Ohio State Buckeyes, 24-14, the final score there. We'll have more on the college football playoff a little bit later on in the program. Colby Dant will join us in about 1 hour with all of his breakdowns, with all the matchups coming on New Year's Day. In the meantime, though, we have neglected hockey. So I said, you know what? Got to hit up JD, our own Jonathan Davis. You know him, VSiN NHL analyst on X at West Coast Hockey. And he joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. JD, I want to wish you a happy new year. I appreciate you doing this as always. And I want you to noodle this for the end of the conversation. I have a Stanley Cup future on the Anaheim Ducks to win the cup. I need another fun one to add to the portfolio, maybe from the Eastern side of things. So think about that right now. We'll come back to it at the end of the conversation. But instead, let's begin with some of the matchups you like for the Thursday card in the National Hockey League, Winnipeg and Toronto. And this is a back-to-back situation that you're looking to fade. Right now, the Jets plus 124, Toronto minus 148. The total in the game is 5.5.
Dustin, how crazy is 2025 where the Buffalo Sabres, who have a chance to equal the New York Jets for the longest playoff utility streak in North American sports history, have now won 10 in a row, and the Winnipeg Jets, the team that had the best record in the NHL last year, close out 2025 with the worst record in the NHL this season. It's bonkers. And they go into Toronto on January 1st against the Maple Leafs, as I said, the back end of a back-to-back. And Winnipeg is just, they have struggled this year as an underdog, like they will be on New Year's Day. They are 0-7 as a road dog. They are 1-12 as a dog in general. Yeah, this is all Toronto on New Year's Day. And the Maple Leafs get Winnipeg's backup goalie, Eric Comrie, who has been very leaky of late. Comrie giving up 4 goals or more in 7 of his last 9 starts. We'll take Toronto's team total at over 3.5.
All right, let's go to the Hurricanes taking on the Canadiens. Right now, Carolina's almost minus $2, plus $1.64 with Montreal. Total in the game, 6.5. What jumps out to you in this matchup?
Well, look, Montreal has been the cardiac kids. They've played their last 2 games in the state of Florida. They entered both those games, Dustin, without a goal. Out of goal in the third period. And then they forced both games to overtime. They scored 4 against Tampa on Sunday. Tied the game up at 4, lost in a shootout. A couple of nights ago, they played Florida Panthers. They scored 2 goals in the final 5 minutes, forced overtime, and win in overtime. Now they're going to get a Carolina team that is a little ticked off, struggled of late. They got blasted in Pittsburgh. They're going to have their new number one goalie, Brandon Bussey, in goal for that game on New Year's Day. I love Carolina in this one, but I'm not going to pay the tax on a heavy price at about minus 180. Instead, we're going to play the Canadiens team total under 2.5 at minus 115.
Jonathan Davis is our guest, VSiN NHL analyst. Check up his write-ups over at VSiN.com on X at West Coast Hockey. All right, and then the last game, official play for you. We've got Dallas and Chicago going at it. There's a revenge angle here, I believe. And right now we've got Dallas laying a minus 192. Chicago's plus $1.60, and your total is 5.5.
Yeah, well, Dallas tonight fell as victim number 10 to the Buffalo Sabres on home ice. And they've got to be a little pissed off. And then now they have to go to Chicago, a team that beat them in Dallas about a week ago in a shootout 4-3 in a game that they were an over $3 favorite. Dallas has got Jake Oettinger in goal. They saved their number one goalie for this game in Chicago. I like the Stars here, who are 5-0 on the second half of a back-to-back this year. Let's play Dallas in regulation. You can get that at about even money.
All right, I want to ask you a couple other things in regards to the big picture when it comes to the hockey season, because, I mean, I think our audience might be similar to me for the most part. They don't lock into hockey until the football season ends, unless it's during the week when there's no football on. And, oh, by the way, look at the schedule next week. There will be no weekday football for us. So I think hockey will get a lot more exposure. And, you know, coming into the year, not unlike many other years, JD, I heard a lot of hype about the New York Rangers, but I'm looking in the standings. They are 19-18. Can you explain to me what's gone wrong with New York? Or do you think there's any chance they turn this around?
Well, I hope they do, Dustin, because I have a couple of futures tickets on the Rangers. I had them to win the Eastern Conference and to win the Stanley Cup, mostly based on price. But it's been a struggle. The roster is aging. I think the players are trying to get adjusted to a new coach in Mike Sullivan, who had all those years of success in Pittsburgh, but it has been a struggle for the Rangers, who, you know, were winning only on the road and now they can't win on the road. So I don't know what I think there's a good chance that they're going to move on from their superstar Artemi Panarin, who's an unrestricted free agent. It's been a disappointing year for the Rangers.
Yeah, all right. Another team. My producer, Jared Moore, is a big Devils fan. I'm looking up the board. The Devils, 30-1 to win the title. What I know about the Devils goes back to the last few years. They don't play a ton of offense from what I remember. Can the Devils be a team that gets right from here on out, as right now they're 21-17 on the season?
Yeah, they hurt me tonight, Dustin. I had Columbus tonight, who just blew a 2-0 third period lead on home ice. I'm not a big Devil supporter. This is a team I don't think they've made the playoffs in back-to-back years for almost a decade. And I don't love this roster. I don't think that they're big enough to, I don't think they're really built for the playoffs. Their best player, Jack Hughes, you know, he's come back from injury, but still doesn't look the same, very fragile. I'm one that, hey, look, I think that if the Devils can get themselves into a playoff, I think they're more of a one-and-done team.
All right, then finally, let's go back to what we opened with. JD, I've got the Ducks, I believe, at 55-1 to hoist the Stanley Cup. They got off to a fun start. They're a young team. I'm not sure that bet's going to come to fruition. Is there someone else I should add? I prefer someone in the East to balance out the tickets, but is there someone out there you think might be undervalued in the Cup market right now?
Undervalued. Well, I mean, you get a really good price on the New York Islanders. I mean, I think that they're a team that's going to make the playoffs. And I don't know what the price is on Tampa right now. Like, I've got John Cooper to win Coach of the Year at 10-1. But if you're going to go further down the board, you know, the Islanders, at least, you know, they've got a goaltender that can win you a Stanley Cup in Ilya Sorokin. They've got a Norris Trophy future type defenseman. That's the award for the best defenseman in the NHL in Matthew Schaefer. And they are, they're very strong at the center position. So if you're going to go further down the board, I do like the New York Islanders. If you're going to go mid range, I'd be interested. I don't know what the price is on Tampa right now, but I think Tampa is going to get stronger. I think they're going to make some deals at the deadline to make them stronger, but they, to me, have been one of the bigger surprises, considering the fact they're missing half their blue line.
Tampa right now, +750. The Islanders are 80-1. Look, I grew up an Islander fan. Mike Milbury ruined my franchise, okay? He traded away generational players. Zdeno Chara, Todd Bertuzzi, Brian Berard, Bryant McCabe, Tommy Salah, Roberto Luongo. Like, I should have been watching an all-star team every year, JD. So I didn't follow the Islanders after, but if you're going to tell me at 80-1, they're worth the flyer, I'm going to have to do it. Hey, I appreciate you doing this tonight. Happy New Year to you. We'll talk more throughout the season going forward. Everyone give Jonathan Davis a follow at West Coast Hockey on X and read him all the time over at VSiN.com. Enjoy the rest of your night, man, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks for having me, bud.
Awesome stuff from our own Jonathan Davis, VSiN.com NHL analyst. As the official horse racing partner of VSiN, First Bet is built for bettors who demand more. First Bet isn't just about placing a bet. It's about helping bettors of all levels with AI handicapping tools that provide data-driven insights to help you make smarter bets. First Bet's in-app tools give you win, place, and show probabilities for each runner so you can quickly and easily identify good value plays and improve your ROI. Right now, you can take advantage of their limited-time $250 sign-up offer. To claim your bonus, use promo code VSIN250 when you sign up in the First Bet app or at firstbet.com. That's promo code VSIN250. It's cashing out VSIN, the sports betting network. In case you missed it, the Miami Hurricanes have advanced to the semifinals of the college football playoff. They beat the Ohio State Buckeyes 24-14. They were 7.5 to 10-point dogs, depending on when you looked in the market. Game stays under the total, however you wanted to bet it. 42 all the way down to 39.5. It all cashes to the under. As Ohio State has been knocked off, Miami advances. They will take on the winner of either Georgia or Ole Miss. We've got three awesome college football playoff games. And I think there's an indication that comes off of the Cotton Bowl that we could be in the mix for some chaos. Maybe there's a chance to get down on one of these teams from a future perspective at a good number before the games kick off on Thursday. We'll break it all down, plus a full analysis of Georgia and Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl coming your way next on Cashing Out. We'll be right back.
out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson here with you from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Thanks for making us a part of your night, however you may be tuning in. Happy New Year to those of you already celebrating as we welcome in 2026. But before 2025 could come and go, the Miami Hurricanes declared they are back. The U has returned because in case you missed it, Cotton Bowl has come and gone, and Miami with a 24-14 win as a 7.5-point closing dog to take down Ohio State. You know, that was a shout out to the 03 Fiesta Bowl where Willis McGahee tore up his knee and Ken Dorsey and company were robbed because of a phantom pass interference flag in overtime, which allowed Ohio State and Jim Tressel to win their national championship. A little bit of revenge was enacted today by the 2025 Canes, who will go into 2026 still in the college football playoff. I thought today for Miami, they were the more physical team. If you watch this game from the jump, they were dominating the line of scrimmage, especially on defense. Reuben Bain is going to be a top 3-4 pick in the draft. I still think there's a world where he could go number one. I think he's going to test Myles Garrett type off the charts, where he's a slam dunk home run of a draft pick for a defense, and he's immediately going to make an impact getting after quarterbacks. Like, I'm already anticipating betting Reuben Bain a defensive rookie of the year for next season. He's that special of a player, and if you watch the game, he made Julian Sayin's life a wreck today. Julian Sayin for Ohio State has had the benefit of walking into a situation with great weapons on the outside, but has never once had the burden of having to carry this team in critical moments and make big plays when it matters. And because tonight he had the pressure of Reuben Bain and Mesidor on the other side in his grill almost on every drop back, he really struggled to elevate his game. And I think he'll develop and be fine, but Ohio State had some glaring needs on the offensive line, and Mario Cristobal and company came out and completely exploited it. Words I never thought I'd be saying is that Mario Cristobal showed up to a big game with a better game plan than a coach like Ryan Day, who's won a national title, that's used to being in the playoff every single year, but that's exactly how this went down. Now, it wasn't without some scares along the way. Miami went up with a touchdown in the second quarter to make it 7-0 as Mark Fletcher ran it in. He was 9-1 to be the first touchdown scorer, plus $1.40 to find the end zone in the contest. And then on the next drive, Ohio State threw an interception, which was taken to the house. Miami with the pick six went up 14-0. And it was Keontae Scott, who I think is going to end up being a third, fourth round pick in the draft. And he'll probably be a slot corner to start out, but I like his ball skills. And I think he's going to make an impact in the NFL. He took it 72 yards for a touchdown. And just like that, Miami was up 14-0 at halftime because Ohio State failed to kick a field goal before the break. And instead, Ohio State then comes out in the third quarter, opening drive. What do? They score a touchdown. Think about that. Ohio State will lose 24-14. Had they made that field goal, things are tracking differently throughout this game, and it puts a little bit more pressure on Miami to make some big plays in the game. Instead, Ohio State doesn't get on the board till the third quarter. They score a touchdown. Bo Jackson caps off an 82-yard, 11-play drive. He was minus 135 to score a touchdown. Miami answered with a field goal to make it 17-17. Then we go to the fourth quarter. Jeremiah Smith makes it 17-14 with a touchdown of his own. He was minus 145 to score a touchdown in this game. Miami, then with under a minute to go, drives down the field and made it 24-14 thanks to a Brown touchdown. And he was, I thought I wrote this down. Let me see. I do not have it written down. Okay. Anyway, Brown scores a touchdown for Miami, and that made it a 10-point game. There wasn't enough time. Ohio State didn't have enough timeouts following the Chamar Brown touchdown, and they run out of time, throw an interception, and the ball game's over. Miami gets the win in the Cotton Bowl. They advance. They'll take on either Georgia or Ole Miss, which I think is a really fascinating matchup in the Sugar Bowl and really not getting enough publicity. You know, when Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss, I think it was the best thing to happen to that group. Because now they have an enemy. When you can have a common enemy, you can come together. I think some of my greatest friendships aren't because I'm friends with those people. It's because we hate the same people. And we like to talk about those people. And those people motivate us to make those people we don't like look stupid. So I think there's a world where Ole Miss, following the loss of Lane Kiffin, the promotion of Pete Golding, who feels like the complete opposite of Lane Kiffin, right? You look at the resume, it couldn't be more different. Lane Kiffin was born on third base. Lane Kiffin was born into a football family. Lane Kiffin had the opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL at like 30 years old with the Raiders. He's already been at Tennessee and USC. And what is he, 50-something years old? We've had Lane Kiffin in our lives for like 20-something years at this point. Pete Golding is a guy who had to start out the hard way in Division II Delta State, where he played safety. And by the way, if you don't know about Delta State, it is a great football program playing in the Gulf South Conference. He then went to Tusculum, then Southeastern Louisiana, found his way to Southern Miss, eventually got to UTSA, and then for a few years, he ended up as the defensive coordinator and inside linebacker coach for Nick Saban at Alabama. After that, he followed Lane Kiffin over to Oxford and was his defensive coordinator. Kiffin leaves. Charlie Weiss is going to stay as the play caller, so they have continuity on offense, and now they're going to take on a Georgia team that they already lost to earlier in the year, so they want revenge. And in today's college football world, where I think the floor and the ceiling is closer than ever, I do think it's going to be even harder to beat the same team twice in one year. Let's hear from Pete Golden. He is not the interim. He is the head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels, and he talked about preparing for the Sugar Bowl.
Coming down 3 days prior is a little different than this being a normal away game. But I think, you know, the way the playoff is set up now, like going into the Egg Bowl, that was a playoff game for us. Like if we didn't win that game, you weren't going to be playing in this game and have that opportunity. So I think, you know, the way it's set up now, every game towards the end of this season is that mindset, what everybody's talking about, going 1-0. So I think the mindset and the focus hasn't changed. Obviously, the travel preparation component of it and being here 3 days early and all that. We've got a lot of guys. I think the transfer portal has changed that too, because you brought guys in from other programs that have played in the playoffs, right? And so they individually have some experience, and then you've got coaches around you that have experienced as well, right, that help you prepare with that. But at the end of the day, you got to spot the ball. It's not going to be the call that's going to win the game. It's going to be the execution of the call and the communication of 11 guys being on the same page and playing extremely hard and contesting every play. So it gets back to the players, no doubt.
All right, two things here. One, Pete Golden used to have a man bun, used to be super sloppy, wearing like an oversized stained hoodie, similar to like Matt Patricia. Now he's all buttoned up. He's got the clean haircut. When you're head coach, you got to present yourself differently. But I hope he keeps the same attitude, because I do think he is a ball guy. He is someone who had to do it the hard way. He's a grinder. I think it's going to show in the way Ole Miss is prepared. That's why I like Ole Miss in the first half. At some point, maybe the talent for Georgia takes over in the second half, but I'm not sure Georgia's the name brand value we're used to seeing. I like Gunnar Stockton. He is a way better quarterback than I anticipated. The weapons are improved from what Carson Beck had a year ago, which does help matters. But their run game isn't elite like it used to be. It's good. It's very good, right? It's not elite, though. That's all I'm trying to get across here. 31st in the country, 187 yards per game on the ground, taking on an Ole Miss defense, 66th against the run in the country. So they're not that far apart there. In terms of passing defense, Ole Miss is pretty good. They're 29th in the nation, taking on a passing offense for Georgia, just 76th in the country. I kind of lean the under 55.5 when you got two defensive coaches, Kirby Smart, Pete Golding, in a big game. Just leads me to believe that the game plan will involve trying to be risk adverse, not wanting to put the ball in harm's way. And for Ole Miss, they got a quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss who can use his legs, doesn't have to throw as much if he wants to make dynamic plays for this offense. Let's hear from Kirby Smart, who's been in a lot of big games, and was asked if that matters coming into the Sugar Bowl.
I think it's a good topic for you guys to talk about and debate about, but once the players get on the field, yeah, all that goes away. None of that matters. I mean, we've been in rematches, big games. When you play in the SEC, every week's a big game. You know, when you go on the road in the SEC and play, it's an environment like no other. It can't be matched. And so the gauntlet of what their team has gone through and our team has gone through, this is another, you know, SEC battle. I don't think you can draw much. I don't personally think you can draw much on the experiences you learned from last year, or experiences like travel, extra day in a hotel, where you don't get those in regular season. But in these kind of matchups, it still boils down to the players making plays and coaches putting them in position to.
Yeah, Kirby's a buttoned-up dude, man. He's experienced this before. I just don't think Georgia has the experience we're used to seeing. They don't have the depth we're used to seeing. I think the transfer portal, I think a lot of guys graduating the NFL the last couple seasons, I just think that it's going to be a tough task with an inspired Ole Miss team coming to town. And I took Ole Miss +3.5 in the first half. It is still out there. Listen to these trends about Kirby Smart in the first half. only 59-62 against the spread as a first half favorite. 3-5 against the spread to the first half number in January. 9-15 against the spread in the first half with 2 weeks of or more of rest. 9-15 against the spread in the first half off of a bye. I don't know how this thing goes for four quarters, but I do believe Ole Miss can hang for a half. They've got plenty of guys who want to prove a point, and they want to let Lane Kiffin know he made a mistake in leaving them. I wouldn't be shocked if Ole Miss is about to go on a run and get all the way to the national title. I'd consider a bet on them to win the whole thing to hedge against later. So that's where we stand with that. What are we going to do with Alabama and Indiana in the Rose Bowl? Our buddy Tanner Kern will break it down next on Cashing Out.